Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
This is my favorite day of the week. It is podcast day. I am Pat Sloan with American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. Our show is brought to you by Mode of Fabrics. You can go visit Mode of Fabrics at online at modeoffabrics.com or find it in your favorite quilt shops. We are going to talk about miniatures first. They are just showing up everywhere, and I have Connie Kaufman here, who wrote a book that is adorable called Little Gems, and we're going to talk about that and scraps, and I'm so excited. So, Connie, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
You know, I would like to learn a little bit about how you found quilting. You know, have you been quilting a long time?
Yeah. the first time I did quilting was when my kids were born, when they were babies, but then I really didn't do much until they were in high school and I had more time. I have six books of my own, and I do a lot of patterns for books and magazines. Well, I've been doing it 10-20 years now.
Oh wow. I love your designs. They are wonderful.
The little ones are fun because they're quick and easy.
Yeah, what I want to do is, first I'm going to give your website, Connie Kaufman, that's two Fs in there. You can find her out there. But I want to talk about scraps first, because one of the interesting things about your book, your newest book called Little Gems with Martingale, is that you are really advocating, you know, using scraps. So how have you always kept scraps, or is that kind of new?
No, I always keep my scraps. Part of that's just loving all the fabrics you're working with. You know, you can't part with any of it, so I keep it. I have a system now that I have two of the just plastic shelving units with drawers beside my sewing machine. Each one, they're small, but they each have three drawers, and I keep it right beside my sewing machine. So anytime I have a little scrap left over, I tuck it in a drawer. I have a drawer that has all white and black, and a drawer that's red and green, and a drawer that's all blues and bright. So it's real handy to just tuck them in there. And then when I want to do a project, I can just pull out that drawer, and I've got, you know, you've got a rainbow of small scraps to start with.
So how small of a piece will you keep, Connie?
People ask me that all the time. I actually will keep... I have kept a 1-inch square. and anymore, I keep a little bit larger. But in my drawer, none of them probably are over 3x3.
Okay.
You can do a lot with a little tiny piece, especially if you're paper piecing, because you don't have to worry so much about you know, your bias or anything like that when you're doing paper piecing.
So are you cutting your scraps to any particular size, or you're just throwing them in as is?
I just throw them in as is.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And I keep them pretty neat. I keep them flat. I don't, you know, toss them in a bag and have them all rumpled. I don't want to press them.
Well, they also take up less room, don't they?
Right. Yeah.
If they're not tidy, then you can't get as much in that drawer. So
right. And that's what helps with you when you sort them by color, that you don't have to, you know, sort through and ruffle through them a whole lot.
Well, that's actually a very good way of doing it, because then you're not restricting your size either, since the type of work you're doing.
Right. So, and then, you know, if I want more color, I'll go into my regular stash. But that's a good place to start.
Your regular stash. That's
the bigger pieces.
Where the real stuff is. That's like...
Right.
Okay.
The quilts in this book, the book Little Gems, even for the backing and a casing, it only takes a fat quarter. So you don't need a very big piece to even finish one of these little ones.
Yeah. This is just such a fun book, because when I first got it, I'm like looking at it thinking, oh my gosh, they're so cute. And then I realized they're all the same size.
Right. One quilt is a half inch larger. It's an inch larger because I added a border, but all of the rest of them are they 12 by 12.
12 by 12, right. So you got a little crazy on one of them and put a little border. So So why did you decide on a 12-inch quilt?
Well, I've done quilts all sizes, but I do have, I had one of the Oxfeld wire stands, and the book shows these really well. These are wire stands and wire frames that you can hang your quilts on. Mm-hmm. And I had one of the 12-inch stands, so I had made a couple quilts, you know, and then you think, oh, you know, you could make another one that'll fit on the stand. And so that's kind of where it started from. But these stands are just wonderful. They have different, you can buy them and put a different top on the top of them so that some have little swirls. And they also come in different colored coatings, like there's white and there's bronze and there's kind of a gray.
Yeah, they're great for decorating. You know,
they're wonderful. Now, what I used was the 12-inch stands, but they come in all different sizes, and they also have all different other kinds of things. So their website is oxfeldwire.com, so that's a good place to check out, too.
Yeah, they did a hanger for one of my quilts, actually a couple different of my quilts. But so they'll do custom hangers. They're just so much fun. So
I just love them. So I have stands on my fireplace mantle and on my piano and on the computer desk. And you can put them so many places. It's wonderful.
I want to talk about the actual quilts. Let's talk about, because they're all, are they all paper pieced in the book?
Yes, they are.
Okay. That gives you a lot more control over those little shapes, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Some of them are very tiny, Connie.
Yes, yeah, they are. But some of them are very easy. It's surprising, like even the quilt on the cover, which looks kind of complicated, is a one-block quilt. It's one block. Mm. And if you, you know, use different fabrics and turn them or something, they can look pretty complicated, but they can be pretty simple.
Well, let's talk about how to be successful with these small pieces with the paper piecing, because I've done paper piecing but never really done these tiny little ones. You know, so I'm really curious about what are some tips to be sure that you get it flat and that kind of a thing.
Well, I have five tips for successful small quilts.
Yay.
And the first one is your fabric selection. Of course, you want to use fabrics that have smaller prints. If you have a larger print, you know, you're going to lose part of it, or you'll have a whole different color in another section or something. So a small print is good. I also like to use prints that are modeled or have a little texture to them, or a tone on tone. That gives a little more depth or a little, you know, texture to the quilt. The second thing is thread. I like to use a 50 or 60 weight thread. It's surprising, even when you're piecing, a thicker thread can add a little bulk to your seam. So it makes a little bit of difference. And here you're also sewing through your paper foundation, so that makes it a little thicker there, too.
Right.
I also use it the thinner threads for quilting. Unless you really wanted to have, you know, an accent with a thicker thread, it can look a little bit bulky on a smaller quilt if you use a thicker thread.
Okay.
So I use
the
thinner
thread
for piecing and quilting.
Yeah. I like the thinner thread, too.
Yeah.
So what's
if you get into rayons and things like that, you can get some really pretty threads. So the third thing is the precise piecing, and that's where the paper piecing comes in, because when you paper piece, your seams are all very precise. So the only thing you really have to watch is matching your blocks up together.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if you can sew a straight seam, you can do paper piecing.
Right.
And then the fourth tip is to use a thin batting. And I like to use, I usually use like an 80-20 blend, cotton poly. You could use just cotton.
Okay.
The main thing is to stay away from a polyester or a thicker bat.
Yeah, because you don't want that loft to then sort of distort such a small quilt, right?
That's right, right. Yeah. You don't need that puffiness like a baby quilt. And then the last thing is I use a quarter-inch single fold binding. Now, I'm finding that a lot of people have never done a single fold binding. And with a single fold, I just use inch and a quarter strip of fabric for my binding. And I just sew it to the edge and turn it and then turn it under. And that really makes a big difference. If you do a double fold binding, it really looks bulky.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you more of the look like of a hot pad or something, and right. You don't want that in your quilt.
No.
No.
Now, I want to ask you one question about paper, because you know, everybody who does a lot of paper piecing ends up with, you know, a favorite paper. What do you use?
For this book, I use Foundations for Paper Piecing, and Martingale sells that.
Okay.
I've also used Carol Doak's paper for foundation. And those are cut, you know, just like your computer paper to run through your computer. And they are thinner. They're almost the weight of a newsprint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so...
You can use computer paper, but it is thick and bulky. And this tears so easily. You do need to use a close stitch length when you're sewing. And that just... It serrates your paper, so it's very easy to tear off.
That's another good tip, because with the tiny pieces, sometimes you're not putting very many stitches to go across and sew it down.
That's right. That's right. And so the closer stitches, you know, your seams aren't going to pull apart, and your paper tears off easier.
Yeah. Very good. Well, I want to get in one more thing before we wrap up. You do a lot with batiks. You're actually an ambassador for Island Batik Fabrics.
That's right. Right. I love their fabrics.
Yeah, they are a great company. So you use a lot of that in all of your quilts, or do you do it more for miniatures?
Oh, I use it for everything. Yeah, okay. A lot of different things. This is the second year I've been asked to be an ambassador, so that's really exciting for me. It's wonderful to have the fabrics and to use them. And when you have them on hand, I'm a person that's inspired by the fabric and the color. So this is just working out really wonderful for me. I just had a quilt published in the June-July Quilters Newsletter that has Island Batik fabrics.
Good. Well, you know, Connie, we are out of time. So I am excited to hear about all your tips. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah. We'll be right back after the break.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
Like American Patchwork and Quilting on Facebook for daily quilting inspiration, tips, and giveaways. Find us at facebook.com/APQ Magazine. See our editors share their tips, ideas, and techniques by visiting allpeoplequilt.com and clicking on videos.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We're going to talk a little bit of clothing and a little bit of fabric design. I have Caroline Hulse of Sew Caroline with me. I first saw her work and met her at one of the trade shows because her fabric with Art Gallery was being displayed, and it was all of her designs were made up in it. And it was like, you know, I was like, oh, I have to go and see what this is all about. Caroline, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me, Pat.
You know, I first learned to sew by making clothing, so I am always drawn to anybody who makes clothing. So I'm always like, you know, I don't do it enough myself anymore, but
it's a fun thing to know how to do, for sure.
When did you start sewing and making clothing?
Well, one year in college, I decided that I wanted a sewing machine for Christmas. It was about 6 years ago now, probably, and so I got one and just didn't really know what I was doing and taught myself how to sew on the internet, used a lot of YouTube videos and things like that, and just really, I just loved making, and that was the way that I kind of expressed myself creatively, and I just fell in love with it. So it was, I kind of just learned a little bit at a time, and then I get pretty stubborn sometimes and like to just try things and do it and figure it out as I go. And so I did a lot of things that way. So that was fun. But
what were you going to college for?
I have a degree in finance.
Okay.
That I guess I kind of use with my business, but right. I never worked corporately with my degree. So
yeah. Yeah. Well, my degree's in computer science, so, you know, it's like we all...
It's okay. I have a degree, that's what I say.
I did spend 20 years there, though. So one of the things I love about your thought process, Caroline, is that you really are passionate about handmade fashion. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think I am. I'm really passionate about handmade fashion. I think it came from... you know, me learning how to sew at an older age. And I just really feel like it gives me a lot of creative, thought, and it gives me a place to like express my creativity in kind of a non-traditional way, I guess, with the clothes that I wear. And, I feel like it gives women the feeling of being empowered when they are able to sew their own clothes. And I feel confident wearing my clothes that I've sewn. And I just think I just love handmade fashion. I love seeing like what other people create and just how inspired all of that is. I think it's really cool.
Yeah. I love that it's coming back around because there was a large, you know, and I think it's done that all through history. My mother didn't sew, my grandmothers didn't sew. But then I did. Now it's in then there was a period where people didn't really sew their clothing too much, and now it's all exploding again. So
And I think it's really cool to see how people, you know, take certain fashion trends and then kind of translate them into the DIY, thought. And I don't know, I just have really been inspired by other women who sew their own clothes, and that's really, you know, propelled me to keep doing what I'm doing because it's really fun and
it is fun.
So yeah.
So now when you're doing your clothing, what fiber content do you like to work with?
Like I said, I have a degree in finance, and then I decided I wanted to be a teacher. And so it's a long story, but I went back and got like alternatively certified to teach. And, then I couldn't find a job. And so I got this part-time job at a local quilt shop here in town. And I've never really been much of a quilter. I really admire quilting, and I think it's beautiful, but I don't have much patience for it. And so I was surrounded by a lot of quilting cottons. And so when I first started sewing, most of the things that I sewed were with quilting cottons. You know, I would sew like skirts or like simple dresses and things like that out of quilting cotton. So I have a big love for that, which I think is different than some people who sew their own clothes, because I don't use a ton of fashion fabrics. I like using, and then I think it's cool because now a lot of the manufacturers like Art Gallery, who I license my designs to, they're doing different kind of substrates like voiles and the knits and that. So I typically either sew clothes out of a jersey knit, quilting cotton, or a voile. Those are the main three that I use. I've used some rayons and some other stuff, but those are the three that I tend to go back to. So
now, can I just ask a question about the quilting cottons? Because one of the things about garment making is that they don't always look that great in cotton. You know, this cotton just isn't made necessary. I mean, you don't go to the store and buy a lot of 100% cotton clothing, you know, linen, you know, other things that drape nicely. Do you have a tip for people who would prefer to use quilting cotton because they want to use the, you know, the images on it, for how to select maybe a pattern for, you know, what the pattern and the quilting cotton, you know, what do you have to think about?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely about the fiber content and all the quilting cottons. I mean, they're all 100% cotton, but they're all made differently. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can get some that are designer, you know, quality quilting cotton and they feel like cardboard. And then others feel like really nice. And so it's hard to know. I do a lot of shopping online for fabric and like it's hard to know what they're like. So it's nice to be able to go into a store and actually feel them.
Mm-hmm.
This is not like a shameless plug, but Art Gallery makes the best quilting cottons, in my opinion. And I sewed with theirs were my favorite to sew with before I started working with them. Just with the feel and the drape, they're like, they're lighter weight and they're just really nice. And most of the clothes that I've sewn with Art Gallery quilting cottons have all turned out beautifully. And I mean, you do have to press them if you want it to look nice, and I mean, you do have to iron it and stuff like that, but it's worth it. I mean, right now in this stage of life, I'm like 4.5 months pregnant, so I'm wearing mostly knits.
Yeah.
So I don't have to do much pressing with that, but a quilting cotton would be too small, but
So, yeah, like, if you're looking at the fabric on the bolt, Caroline, I mean, I think if you pull it off, you can kind of hold it, can't you, and see, besides touching it, you can kind of see how it drapes. You know, if it's going to hang stiff, it's probably not good for clothing.
Yeah, and usually I take a few rolls off of it and, like, unfold it, you know, how it's folded on the bolt, and kind of, like, just play with it and feel it and see what it feels like. And if it feels like it's going to drape nicely, then I, you know, try it out. But
yeah,
it is hard because, you know, a lot of the really pretty prints and the, you know, all that stuff, it really is sometimes a crapshoot to see, like, what is it going to look nice or not.
Right.
But
now, your fabrics, are they in cottons and knits and other things?
Yeah, so the my newest collection with Art Gallery that's coming out later this month is there'll be all the prints will be on cotton, the quilting cotton, and then there'll be I think 4 knits and 1 or 2 voiles. So it'll be a good mixture.
Now explain what voile is for those who aren't really familiar with it.
It is a, how do I explain it? It's a cotton, but it's loose. More loosely woven, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And it's very silky. Isn't it more silky?
It's like silky feeling, and it drapes really beautifully, and it's more like a lawn.
Mm-hmm.
If you're familiar with that.
And does it need pressed as much? Really, really is fun. It still like a cotton where it needs, you know, it's going to wrinkle up?
Yes, it is cotton, and so it is going to wrinkle some.
Yeah.
But, it's really nice to make dresses with, or even like, I don't know, I think I want sheets made out of it. It's so soft, sleep in it. But yeah, it's really, I make a lot of like kimono overlays, and they're really like just simple little jacket things. And I make a lot of those in voiles because they're just soft and they drape nice and they're easy to wear. So they're really nice. Blend of, I'm now not sure the fiber content, actually. Yeah. You put me on the spot.
That was a good answer. It was a good answer. You, your next fabric line is called Happy Home, and it is like, I am like so excited about it because I need it all. It is so cute.
Thank you. I am really excited about it, and I'm really proud of it. I worked really hard on it. Fabric designing is something that has not come naturally to me, but it's been a lot of fun and a huge learning process. But this new collection is going to be really, really fun. I like it a lot. So I've been sewing with it like crazy the past few weeks getting ready for Quilt Market. Yeah. So,
well, you can see it at Caroline's site, sewcaroline.com. You can click over to her fabric section. Tell me a little bit about the writing, because, you know, I'm really into text. I have text in my fabric mm-hmm. lines, and so mm-hmm. I loved your text print. Tell me, is that hand your hand drawing?
Yeah, so that's my handwriting using like a brush, I guess a paintbrush. Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of the current inspiration behind this line was that my family is really close, and we have a really wonderful community of friends here in Fort Worth, and we just value our families and our friends a lot. And so I wanted this line of fabric to be kind of reflective of that. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the words in the text print are meaningful things to me about what family and friends mean, like memories and
that's awesome.
Family and laughter, yeah. Warmth. My oh. sister and I were both adopted. And so I put the word chosen in there
because
that's like a fun
yeah.
little shout out to the family, but so I think it's really a really pretty print, and it'll be great for like quilt backs or really anything, but right. I see it like that.
Well, Caroline, yeah. This has been so exciting. Good luck with your line, and thank you for talking to me.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
We are going to be right back after the break.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg. Join me in 2015 for a brand new video series called Show Me How, brought to you by Baby Lock. Each month, I'll show you how to complete a simple project from start to finish. Learn new techniques, see tips, and sew a great project. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/videos to watch.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I am jumping over into an international guest to Australia. And I have Gemma Jackson here of Pretty Bobbins Quilting. And I've been following her blog and her quilting, and I just love what she does and want to, you know, share her work with all of you. So, hi, Gemma. Thank you for being here.
Oh, hi, Pat. How are you going?
I am great, and I really appreciate that everybody I call in Australia has to get up super early to talk to me.
That's right. I've had two coffees, and I've been up for an hour, which was about 5 a.m. So if I talk really, really fast, please forgive me.
Okay, we'll know what's going on then. So tell me a little bit about how did you find quilt making? Have you sewn since you were little?
Yeah, so my mum was a trained dressmaker, so I've always been around fabric and around sewing, and I think it's a really, lucky thing to have, because I never had any fear of fabric or making things, but I was never really into quilts or exposed to quilts. So mm-hmm. when I got a little older and I started to have children, I made a few play mats for my friends using sort of quilting methods and just sort of had a taste of it. And then a few years later, just about 3 or 4 years ago now, I was quite sick with pneumonia and I was recovering, and that was when I really got into quilting, because I found, you know, the recovery from pneumonia was really tough and I was really fatigued, and quilting was something I could pick up and put down.
Yeah. And it was a little bit more straightforward maybe for you, the kind of work through it.
I think as well at that time, I really, you know, I sort of had the basic skills, but that was when I really discovered quilting blogs. And, you know, I was spending a lot of time in bed reading these amazing blogs and being inspired. And I think the other reason it really appealed to me was, you know, I took 8 years out of the paid workforce, and it was a really tough transition for me. And quilting was something that gave me a lot of personal satisfaction and a lot of self-worth.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, well, I'm so glad you found quilting. That's
me too. It's my savior.
Now you are a long armor. And what I've, besides the colors and your fabrics, which I think are amazing, you also do some incredible quilting when you put everything together. Did you start quilting your own quilts right away?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I am a terrible business person because I would never give my quilt to somebody else to be quilted.
We won't tell anybody.
Yeah, thanks. Our secret. No, I guess I didn't have any fear in the beginning. And in fact, the very first quilt I ever quilted was with, you know, that really hideous, a really high loft polyester wadding that you used to get in the 80s. I had that. I had my grandma's sewing machine, which was about 40 years old. I didn't have a walking foot, and I just pulled that through. And I didn't know any better, you know, and it worked.
Yeah, you're like, man, this isn't much fun, you know? What's wrong with this process?
That's right. And I think, you know, the free motion quilting, I started stippling and I thought that was pretty cool. And I didn't have any great expectations of myself. So it was easy to jump in. And then I sort of allowed myself to grow at my own pace. And I think as well, because I was living in New Caledonia at the time, which is a small Pacific island, and I didn't have a quilt group and I sort of wasn't seeing what anybody else was doing. And whilst I found all the quilting blogs inspiring, I didn't find them intimidating at all.
I think that just shows, I mean, that shows your personality, that you're kind of out there, that you are willing to try anything, which is, and you have such exuberant, brilliant quilts. I love your quilts.
Oh, thank you.
When we were writing back and forth, you told me that you felt like quilting was one of the places or a place where you found your voice, your creative voice. Can you tell me how that feels?
Oh, totally. Look, and I was reflecting on this last night, and I was thinking it was funny. When I first left work, we'd moved overseas, and I wasn't pregnant. I didn't have a child, and people would ask, well, why aren't you working?
Yeah.
And it was really tough. Like, I'd gone from being this young professional and having a really strong identity to not really having anything, and I found it really tough. And one day I said to my husband, you know, when you come home at the end of the day from work, I need you to tell me I've done a good job, even if it's just the vacuuming, even if it's just making lunch. You know, you really need that that positive fulfillment. And so with quilting, when I finally made my way to quilting and I thought, you know what, I am actually good at this and I like it, I didn't feel the need, and I still don't feel the need to have anybody else tell me that I'm doing a good job, because you know, it's the only place in my life that I've really found that confidence that I know that I'm good at it, and I love it, and I want to share that with other people and enthuse them and share my knowledge and help them feel that sort of positivity. And, you know, when I'm teaching, because I teach quilting and patchwork as well, you know, I'm always telling people, like, just don't strive for perfection. Just, you know, just have a go, because if you don't, if you get caught up in wanting things to be perfect, you're never going to find that confidence. You just, you know, it's so important. And I think for me, I've gone back into the paid workforce. I've been back for about a year now, and I do my business part-time as well. And at work, I'm always questioning myself. You know, I'm always lacking in confidence and thinking, did I give the right answer? And, you know, before I open my mouth, I have anxiety and I'm feeling nervous. But I'll go to quilt guilds and I'll do trunk shows and I'll speak in front of 200 people. No nerves at all. I just love it.
Well, you just need to get those office people to look at you know, to be quilters. Then you can just sort of.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, guys, I know what I'm talking about.
Right. That would be really fun. Now, you took a trip. I think I have this right. You went to QuiltCon this year in the U.S., which was in Austin in 2015. Was that your first trip to something like that in the U.S.?
Yeah, it was. And look, it was super exciting. Funnily enough, I've traveled a lot in Asia and a little in Europe. And America was never really on my radar. And then I started quilting and I was like, I need to get there. That's where it's happening. But, you know, I've got three kids and, you know, we don't sort of have a lot of money. And so it was sort of on the wish list. And when the first QuiltCon happened, I was sitting there with my phone watching Instagram and all these people having an amazing time. And, you know, I was lucky enough that we were able to make it happen for me this year.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, it was funny. I've said to a few people, on the first and second day, I kind of felt like I was in some kind of, you know, cult or something because walking around with like 2,000 or so other quilters, all just, you know, feeling so hyped, so happy to be there. It was brilliant. And, you know, the connections I made there, meeting people that I'd known online, people that I'd admired, it was really, really inspiring and real confidence building. Yeah, it was great.
I think the shows like that particular one does have that vibe, you know, that sort of cult vibe. A lot of other shows are way bigger, so a lot more attendees and things like that, so it's harder to get that. But I went to the first one, but I was teaching somewhere else for the second one. Let's switch a little bit, Gemma. And since you are a wonderful quilter, you know, you put those three layers together and add that fabulous design on top. Do you have some sort of thoughts for people who want to approach taking their quilting to another level? You know, a lot of people, you know, do basic quilting to get the things together. But what can people do to sort of up that level and put a more design, or like you put words in yours and things like that?
Yeah. So I think I'm actually teaching a design class this Friday. And so I've been thinking about this a lot. And this was something I noticed at QuiltCon, actually. A lot of people are into utilitarian quilting, either straight line quilting or stippling. And I really think there's so much more you can do. I mean, a lot of it is just practice, you know, it's muscle memory. I think there's also, you know, some of it is talent. You also need to be inspired and have an idea of where you're going, but that's something that you can learn, you can practice. But I guess, you know, often when I'm designing a quilt and I do like 99% of what I do is my own original work. I don't really follow patterns. I'll be designing a quilt and I'll be thinking in the back of my mind about how I want to quilt it. So the quilting will either be equal to the piecing, slightly more than the piecing, or complementing it. I never quilt just to hold a quilt together.
Okay. That's a really cool thought process, that you have one of three things and that you want to approach the design to achieve that goal, basically.
Yeah. And I think, you know, people, like, I've still got my first quilts that I made and I look at them and, you know, like the stippling every now and then crosses over itself or is a bit jerky, you know, it's not so smooth. But, you know, that's really great. That's a good reminder of where I started. I mean, everybody's a beginner and you have to allow yourself to be a beginner. And I think you just have to, don't raise your expectations too high, because if you do, you're just going to be disappointed and you'll give up and you won't try your next quilt. You'll keep going to your long armor or you'll keep stitching in the ditch. And by the way, that's one of my biggest tips. Never stitch in the ditch. Right. It's doomed to failure.
Yeah, that does nothing for your quilt.
That's right. I'd rather do wonky lines or, you know, some big stippling. Yeah.
Now, do you take a big quilt? Like, some of your quilts are very asymmetrical, your personal quilts, like the one that I shared where you're in front of it, the gray quilt. that. So do you like draw out some designs ahead of time on paper or anything?
Sometimes I do. I think I generally spend about, I would say, like 3 to 6 weeks designing a quilt in my head. So I just start thinking about it. I spend a lot of time trawling Instagram, design magazines, you know, looking out the window, coming up with ideas. I might be feeling like triangles, or, you know, I'll have a feeling about where I want to go, and I'll just start to build on that. It's like percolating in the back of my head. I've got EQ7, but I'm really not a computer person. So I usually just grab a scrap piece of paper and a pencil and sketch up roughly what I want to do, and then start cutting and piecing. And I tend to, you know, I'll spend quite a long time coming up with a design, but then once I start, I focus, you know, it'll be like between, say, 3 or so days of intense piecing and cutting. And I might put the quilt top aside for a while, but the actual making of the quilt top happens really fast and furious. Yeah. And, you know, the kids don't get fed and my husband doesn't get any love.
It's like, what? There's people in the house? I'm busy.
Yeah. Be quiet. I'm quilting.
Yes. Oh, I like that. I like that you have you know, that you put thought into it in advance is kind of interesting, you know, because you are doing, you know, unique designs, you're designing. So you also still quilt for other people, or is it mostly your own work now?
Yeah, so that was a really interesting thing that happened to me at QuiltCon, that on the first day of QuiltCon, I sort of went back to my room that night and I thought, you know, I'm going to reduce the number of customer quilts I take in. I'm going to limit it to 2 or 3 a month so that I have time to quilt my own pieces, and not just functional pieces, but, you know, really pushing my own skill set. And on the last night of QuiltCon, I had dinner with a couple of amazing quilters, Krista Withers and Kathleen Riggins, and, you know, people that just really inspire me. And Kathleen is, you know, she's this young, incredible quilter. And she said, you know what, this is how much I charge, and it's pretty much double what I charge. And I thought, oh my goodness, I don't need to reduce the number of quilts I take in. I just need to value myself, and then I'll have fewer customers, which isn't a negative thing. It actually gives me time to build my skills, because, you know, the time it actually takes to make amazing quilts, there's very few people that can afford to pay for that. And, you know, so you tend to tailor what you're doing to people's budgets to make it affordable. So I still do quilt for others. I tend to do a lot of edge-to-edge work for customers at the moment. And then the custom work is, you know, I throw on, between every customer quilt, I throw on a practice piece, and even if it's a whole cloth, and I just push myself and let my imagination take me there, and yeah.
Oh, I love that. Oh, this, Gemma, this has been wonderful.
Thank you for having me. It's I think the nerves of having your huge audience there has woken me up and made me coherent.
There you see what an exciting start to your day.
That's right.
Now you can go quilt out some energy. So
yeah.
Thank you, Gemma.
Thank you so much for having me.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making pillowcases and creating smiles. For people who love to sew or quilt, it's so easy to lift spirits and bring smiles to hospitalized kids, homeless families, and others in need. Simply join American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. Make 1, 2, or more pillowcases and donate them in your local community. You'll create just as many smiles. Join the movement today. Find complete details, download free patterns, and record your donations online at allpeoplequilt.com/million pillowcases.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I have the amazing Roseanne Kermes from Rosebud's Cottage. Roseanne comes on several times during the year, and we chat about a topic a little bit more in depth. She and I do a lot of things together, so we sort of can bring you these sort of in-depth talks. So hi, Roseanne.
Hi, Pat. How are you today?
I am good. I know you are like... you have like a list like my list right now, and you're like going out of town any moment, aren't you?
That's like... I have a flight early tomorrow morning, so I'm okay. Doing all that last minute stuff. Like, you know what that is.
Yeah, so it's like at least you're not at the airport talking to me right now. I was like, can I get you to come on? We wanted to, when you and I were talking, we thought, let's do something a little different. And we came up with five things to make you a better quilter, because you know people always ask this, don't they?
Yes, everybody wants to know what they're doing wrong or how they can improve on what they are doing, because they take a lot of pride in the projects they make, and they just want to do a better job and learn more things. So, I thought our five tips were pretty good. Should I start?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, well, I think the very first one is to invest in good tools. And when I first started quilting, I didn't have a lot of money. I was a stay-at-home mom, but I saved up to buy the best rotary cutting equipment I could afford, and it has served me well over all these years. So I think even though the price on equipment seems intimidating, you get a better value for your money when you use, you know, tools that are sharp. Case in point, the other day I was hand-cutting some wool, and I was using a pair of scissors that were probably meant for something else, like maybe paper. And I was getting frustrated. I switched to a pair of applique scissors that were sharp from the screw all the way out to the tip, and mm-hmm. It made just a world of difference. So I just think, you know, having good tools that cut makes your cuts more accurate, makes your life a little bit easier. I think it's important, too, to ask your friends for recommendations. Find out what they are using. Watch other people at classes to see what kind of tools that are their favorites. And just really ask and find out what works for others before you invest in it.
Yeah, and I have one other point I want to say there on this one before we go to the next one, is that rulers, I teach a lot on the road, and people will use the same ruler they bought when they just started and didn't want to invest in anything, and they're still using that same ruler 10 years later. It's time for a new ruler.
The test for that is to grab your ruler that you use right now all the time, draw a straight line on a piece of paper, and you will be shocked at how it is no longer straight.
It's not, you know, you curve off some of the plastic often with cutting. It's just, and you wear it down. So, all right. Now we might go back and add in some other points, but I want to get all five of these in. One sweep through. So, the next one that we talked about, which is, it sounds like, oh yeah, yeah, I know that, but really we quilters don't always get it right. That quarter inch seam allowance. You can be quilting 20 years, right, and still need to check.
Yes. I think, you know, investing in a quarter-inch foot is a huge deal. Almost every sewing machine has that available, and, you know, sometimes they're hybrids, and you just have to ask the dealer for it. But also a few other things that make your seam allowance accurate is slowing down to sew straighter. Mm-hmm. And I heard on the commercial just before us, watching the side of the fabric and not the needle, that makes a big difference in being able to sew straighter and get accurate seams. The other thing is to do that test to make sure you are getting an accurate quarter-inch seam. And if people go to allpeoplequilt.com and go to the Haul to Quilt section, there's a section in there on piecing, and then there's another one on the perfect quarter-inch. And that gives you a little test that you can use to make sure that you are getting a quarter-inch, and it even troubleshoots for you if you're seam allowance is off a little bit. I think even if you're an experienced quilter, you should try that every now and then.
Mm-hmm. And people assume that a quarter inch foot gives you a perfect quarter inch, but it doesn't.
Oh, no.
It may on some machines, but you need to test it, because I think that's the one downfall is that it gives you a false sense of security. People just think, oh, I don't need to test it. I'm using a quarter inch foot. Well, it could be how you're sitting, where your eye movement is. If you don't have the fabric all the way over, just because it's a quarter inch foot doesn't mean it's, you know, you still need to be tested.
Well, and sometimes it's too the placement of the needle. If you have a needle that moves back and forth, I have one sewing machine that we always have to remember to click it one time to the right in order to get our quarter inch.
Right.
So it's just, you know, you have to know the machine that you're using.
Yeah. The third one, this is like, I know everybody laughs about this one too. It's like the quarter inch. It's like, what? Yeah, clean your sewing machine.
Like cleaning your room. Clean your sewing machine.
I have seen on my Facebook group, I have seen like pictures of the big lint balls people have taken out. You know, they're like felted, you know, down from all the compression.
As a shop owner and a professional, I am horrified when I do that in my sewing machine because I waited too long.
Yeah.
It's like embarrassing. Yeah. I think people should get in the habit of brushing out their machine every time they change a bobbin. You know, if you're sewing a lot, you're going through bobbins quite a lot, and there's a lot of lint that's building up. So when you change your bobbin, brush it out. But then you should also deep clean your sewing machine after every project. Take your little tool kit that's in it, take it apart as much as you can, and get the lint and the dust out of it just so that it'll sew better.
And a lot of us have machines in a case, so you know it's a bit more work because you've got to get in there, but it's worth it.
Yes, you might have to take off the underside too, tip it on the side, and then screw that. There's a lot of lint and stuff that lives down there too. I think it's important too just to even wipe off your sewing machine, even if you know you're using it a lot, and it's like anything else in your house, it gets dusty. If you wipe it off, that also keeps it clean. And I think it's always fun to sew with something clean. And then I make it a point to take my sewing machine in once a year to have it serviced. I do it at a time of year where I know that I'm not going to be sewing a lot, and I put it on my calendar. I have it on like my Google Calendar where, you know, August 15th, take your sewing machine in to be tuned up. It's worth the money.
Yeah, because, you know, if you've got something, you know, slowly that, you know, deteriorating, it's going to get caught. So you don't have a problem. All right. Number four, learning, continuing to learn. This whole segment is about learning, but really there's more to it than that.
There's a lot of stores that have demo days where they invite you to come in and check out how to do something, how to use a tool, even just how to do a new technique. Those are good places to learn, or even to take a class. A class could be at a community ed in your town or at your guild or at a shop, or if somebody comes in to teach, kind of like what you do when you go out to teach people, go in and take those classes, because you're learning from who is ever presenting the class, but also you're learning from the people around you. I like to watch videos, too, to learn a technique that I don't know. Sometimes it's just enough to give me just a little step that I am missing to make a project successful.
Of the videos are really detailed, too, so they get up close. I mean, sometimes you have to hunt around for one that's giving you what you need, but they're not hard to find.
Yep. I think it's important, too, to ask somebody for help. If you are stuck, call a friend, go to a shop. Email a guild member, ask somebody to help you with a piece that you don't understand. I also think it's important to try something new. If you are used to just sewing half square triangles, or maybe you've just started and you're still doing just rectangles and squares, push yourself to go to the next level. Try the half square triangles, or try something that's really out of your comfort zone, just to have the challenge of it. Even if you would never use that technique again, at least you would understand it when people are talking about it. You can kind of participate. The other thing that I like to do is reading quilt magazines and books. I like to look at quilt blocks because I like to see how they're constructed. And I think the important thing for magazines and books is they show you how to use color. That's not something that I feel very confident in some days, but it's nice to look at a magazine where a lot of times, you know, the fabric is right on trend, to be able to see, well, how are they using the new solids, for instance, or a lot of people are using gray as a neutral. How are they blending it with other colors? And I think that's what you get from magazines.
And a lot of the magazines, you know, American Patchwork and the Quilts and More, there is other really cool information in those magazines. So it's not just a set of patterns. There's lessons, there's challenges, how to do things. It's if you haven't picked up a magazine recently, like get up after you listen to me and go get one. That's
Well, yeah, I think the other thing too, they have reader tips in there. Mm-hmm. And they also always have a tutorial at the schoolhouse where mm-hmm. you can learn in the magazine how to do certain things. So I think they're very valuable.
Yeah. And we have number five. So we have a couple minutes to do this one. Number five, that when you and I came up with this list, we decided this one was really important and probably something people don't think about a lot. And that's show your work. And I know you are really passionate about that.
I am. You know, I have a club, our wool club at our store, and when we have show and tell, it's exciting to me to see how clever people are, and also to see the benefit that people get from having other people experience the joy of that project as much as they did. They're very proud of their work, but when somebody else says that work is amazing, it makes mm-hmm. people feel good, and I think, you know, everybody needs that ego boost. If you don't have a club like that, you know, you can join a guild or even just your friends, just to have a place to show. I think, too, at a guild, when people bring in their projects, it inspires other people to try something new. Mm-hmm. And so not only are you showing work, you're also providing a creative focus for somebody else.
We have all the online communities too. You know, you don't have to have a blog. You can come to Facebook or to Instagram and share photos, or to Flickr if you prefer that format. And you could share your photos there. Even if you went to like American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's Facebook page, you could share something in the comments that you made from the magazine. You can people share in my group all the time. Mm-hmm. And you're in a lot of groups too.
Yeah, and I know in the comments sometimes on American Patchwork's Facebook page, people will show those photos, and you know it'll be maybe of the project that they were featuring, and then somebody shows a different version. It's like, oh man, I like it in that color too. So I think you get a lot out of it by sharing your work and then letting other people experience what you've made.
Yeah,
The last thing to do is enter quilt shows. I know it sounds kind of like, oh, I'm not good enough or whatever.
Yeah.
I encourage people to enter just for the fun of entering. It's not about the ribbon. It's mm-hmm. about being able to show off what you've done and to take part in an event like that. I think that's really fun and important, too.
Yeah. And you gain way more than you're going to realize by being able to just go and experience and seeing your quilt hanging and have people admiring it. And it's not scary, and there's a lot of shows that are smaller shows, so you don't have to enter Houston or anything like that. You can do something a little bit smaller.
Well,
Roseanne, this has been fun.
Well, I look forward to seeing you soon, Pat. Thank you for letting me come on the show again. This is always fun to talk to you guys.
I know. You have a great trip, and we'll talk again.
Sounds good. This is
American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Please visit us at allpeoplequilt.com at the magazine. You can visit me at patsloan.com. We both have newsletters, and you can join us at Facebook and over on Instagram, Pinterest. We both have Pinterest boards, so that's a lot of fun. We will see you next week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.